Good evening, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Jaybird Watching. I am Craig Boren, your host this week with my friend Brendan Panikkar here. We've still got one member on the IR, and our pinch hitter is even gone this evening, Brendan. So we had to come up with another one. We're testing the depth of our friends. Well, there you go.
We made a trade. We've made a very splash acquisition at the deadline.
Very big splash acquisition as far as that goes, because one of our actual guy, honestly, Brendan, I didn't realize that he hasn't been on the show in a while, and we had to hurry up and correct this.
Yes, absolutely.
So without further ado, I bring you our old friend, Jason Lee. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing well. I'm super excited to be here to talk some Blue Jays baseball. It's definitely been a while. Like, I've been super busy with school recently, but the time worked out, so super pumped to talk about our team.
Yeah, and I just find it funny, we've been trying to figure this out for weekly planned weeks, and then this one was like, hey, by the way, we're doing a show tomorrow night, we need somebody, and yeah. Here you are.
So now we know how to get you, Jason. Just make it very ad hoc.
Within a 24-hour window up to.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, guys, there's plenty going on around the Toronto Blue Jays here this evening, going into tonight's show, that we're going to have some serious implementations of what's going on with this team's roster. And I think we've got to talk this first thing out. Mats is definitely not going to be a Toronto Blue Jay. He signed a 4-year deal with out of right field, it seemed like, with the St. Louis Cardinals. I didn't realize they were going to be looking for a pitcher. I think they were looking to make the big splash, but they got some of the Mats they can trust. Looking at this contract, Jason, what do you think? This is obviously very good for Steven Mats to have capitalized on this, big year they just had. But what do you think the Blue Jays aspect was on this whole thing with him getting a fourth year, it looked like, in that same money that we were kind of talking.
Yeah, I think firstly for Steven Matz, it's a great deal for him. He's a solid back end starter. He's a number 4 or 5, gives you high 3, low 4 ERA. He'll be there for 25 to 30 starts a season, and that is super valuable. And I think that's why the Blue Jays definitely kept trying to re-sign him. I know before the qualifying offer deadline, they had a multi-year offer out there, and then it was reported last night that they had a 3-year offer to Steven Matz, and obviously only enough to be confident in offering that deal. But for me, at 4 years for 44 to the Blue Jays, probably not. I think he deserves that contract, but at the same time, in terms of the Blue Jays perspective, I think there are better opportunities out there and more intriguing opportunities out there. And furthermore, I'm just confident that, whoever stuck with, and at least mold him into that back end starter that Steven Matz would have been anyways. So for that long of a contract, I'm actually quite sad, like happy that the Blue Jays, I don't know if avoid was the right word, but missed out on him.
It's one of those deals that definitely, I think he's going to live up to most of this. I don't see this being an issue, especially with what he figured out. We saw what he could do in a Mets uniform. That could go right with Steven Matz this past year with the Toronto Blue Jays. But Brendan, this has kind of fallen into that same ballpark as some of the contracts that we've seen over the last week in the Anthony Desclafani deal with the Giants and whatnot. It's basically in that same wheelhouse. So I think he got market rate from that. I was just really surprised that it took 4 years to be the one that actually finally cemented that deal. Is I think this Sclafani's deal is with the Giants was 3 years.
Yeah, I think this Sclafani was what, 336, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Blue Jays came in on for Steven Matz, and I think that would have been fair. It's the fourth year for me that made me say, okay, I'm glad they didn't give him that. 3 years, still, I probably would have found a little too much, to be honest. 2 years would have been perfect, but honestly, at the end of the day, the amount of teams that were reportedly in on him, which was like 8, I think, even closer to 10, I was not surprised that the Cardinals, or I guess whoever would have ended up signing him, was St. Louis, went to a fourth year to secure it. He probably had a ton of 3-year offers on the plate. Maybe he had 3 plus a team option, but the Cardinals gave him a fourth guaranteed. And the term's fine. I have nothing wrong with the term. If the Blue Jays got him and paid him $11 million a year, I think that's great for a guy who can be your 4 or your 5 at the back end of the rotation. But let's be honest, he can find another Steven Matz for probably cheaper and with maybe even more upside. And that one is John Gray. In my mind, that would be a perfect addition to the rotation, because Gray could also be the next Robbie Ray if you get him with Pete Walker and figure that out. So look, it's not I think the Cardinals made a play for him because I was just looking at their depth chart. Wayne had a fantastic year. He came out of nowhere and kind of bounced back to like ace Adam Wainwright, which is awesome to see because I loved him and I love him for his entire career. But after that, they got Flaherty and Dakota Hudson. After that, they're very, very suspect back there. So Matt shores that rotation beautifully. And I won't say that the Blue Jays are bare. My top three are Berríos, Ryu, and Manoah, because honestly, even if Stripling ends up being the five at the end of the season, I hope, or at the start of the season, I hope that's not the case. Hope they're aiming a little higher than that. But Stripling at times this year pitched better than Steven Matz. He's really good. So you already have kind of a Steven Matz in house with Ross Stripling if worse comes to worse and you don't make any additions, which they won't. They will make additions.
To that point, though, there was a point, I think, in this exact show, we were debating Matz versus Stripling.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have under contract and around for what? I think it's another 2 years. So, and very cheap too. So it's great to have a Ross Stripling around.
Before I throw some of these names that I'm looking at here on the free agent tracker on MLB.com, there are one pitching ballparker here where Steven Matz signed. You had went part of the direction here I wanted to go with the next conversation here, Brendan, and that is in-house. What is the worst case scenario at the moment for Toronto Blue Jays pitching, Jason? If we're looking at this whole thing, like I said, or Brendan said, the top three pretty much some of the best top threes in a lot of Major League Baseball. But after that, there could be a quick decline if you're going to Ross Stripling all of a sudden to be that fourth guy. So enlighten.
It's a great question. Otherwise, I think Nate Pearson is definitely in the conversation. There's a lot of guys in the minor leagues that are also super intriguing, but for a team that's competing, that wants to compete for the division title, I think if you're having Nate Pearson and Ross Stripling at the start of the season, that's definitely not a good thing. And I don't think we'll come to that because there's obviously money to spend and prospect capital to spend as well. So we'll definitely acquire at least a pick, probably two or three. But let's say worst case scenario, we head into the season with the starting five of, like you said, Berríos, Ryu, Manoah, and then have Pearson and Stripling, I think that would be a pretty significant call. And then just one last note on Steven Matz. Yeah. I wanted to mention this. I think in terms of the four-year deal, the addition with the third and even fourth year is Steven Matz's success heavily on like the fastball velocity. I think Eno Stars put it out there in a tweet. His wOBA spikes if his fastball doesn't reach 95. So maybe in the next 2 years, you know, he can maintain that fastball velocity. But in the third or fourth, is he going to still be a pitcher that can throw 95 plus to maintain his success? And I would argue no, because we've seen time and time again that velocity decreases throughout a pitcher's career. So, you know, it's even more reason to say that maybe the Blue Jays avoided, you know, not a big catastrophe, but a minor headache if they signed him for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I think there's another piece to that, even as far as you were going with the velocity there too, as we saw in some of the starts where things really did guys, and was the fact that it was he lost control for even 3-4 batters. He's throwing just as hard as he was. But I want to say it was a game against the Mariners specifically that he walked 4 or 5 people in the first 2 innings. It just looked like he was constantly behind on everybody throughout the start. He ended up only giving up 3 or 4 runs, but that 3 or 4 runs 2 years from now was probably looking more like 6 or 7 in that same time frame, right? And if you're not locating and you're not throwing the ball as hard, I can think exactly to that those last couple of years of that contract could look pretty damn rough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And to further some of the weird stats on Matz, guys, Jason, I saw Eno's tweet. Absolutely true. Petriello, Mike Petriello, who they've had on Sportsnet quite a bit on Blue Jays, said Matz had such a weird year, which he did. His ERA dropped from 4.72 in the first half to 2.91 in the second, but his strikeout rate dropped from 25 to 20%. And then there was a lot of home run weirdness in there too. At the end of the day, though, Petriello says he's a 4-ish ERA back end starting pitcher, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I think he was appropriately paid for one of those. So good for the Cardinals to lock him up, and good for Matz to get some term, because I think coming into this year, you never knew what was going to happen with Matz. Guy dealing with injuries. He obviously had that COVID scare on the IL for a little while. And he came back and he actually did pretty well. He was a valuable member of this rotation down the stretch. Good 1 year deal. Good acquisition to get him. You didn't give up anything for him. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think we can all, with what Eno Saris pointed out, and Mike Petriello, there's a lot of cause for potential regression next season. But who knows? I think I'm with you, Jason, on the fact that he could probably replicate this season upcoming and the season after. And just wait until you see if he gets off to a red hot start, what Blue Jays Twitter gets up. Won't be fun.
Yeah, it's always fun in those conversations, even especially when we have those conversations on this show. So everybody that's listening, remember, we do have a lot of those Twitter conversations right here when we do our live recordings. But I think the other crazy thing is the fact that everybody seemed to think that he was dead nuts to go back to the Mets. He was pretty vocal about the fact that he was not happy those last 2 years with the Mets. So this whole thing that's spun out of control with Mets management of who's lying and all that thing, I think his manager said the best, and he goes, well, I wrote and be quiet over here. So I just couldn't believe that next piece of that happened. But I guess that's the Mets new management style, is just piss everybody off and you'll see what happens. But free agent guys, you know, obviously this is somebody that was clearly on the Blue Jays radar, wanted to bring him back. There are a few other names right around the – so on the free agent tracker, Steven Matz is dead even right at 30 right now, is the best available guy, number 30 on the list. Right around him, if I go up to number 24, is the guy you mentioned, John Gray, that I was surprised that he's considered the 24th guy anymore. I love him. I think he's got potential at the age of 30 still, but – is he really going to be a legit good or better than Steven Matz according to this list? Then it has Carlos Rodon at 31, Michael Pineda, Zach Greinke, and Colin McHugh are the other pitchers right in that ballpark, right around where Steven Matz is on that free agent tracker. If you're missing out on Steven Matz, do any of those guys scream fit for you, Brendan?
John Gray, as I said earlier.
That's why absolutely. I was teeing you up.
Yeah, no, I said John Gray for sure. But if I went outside of John Gray, Rodon would be interesting. I'm a huge strikeout guy, but a guy who's dealt with a lot of injuries in his career. There's been some interesting names thrown around in the past, like Dylan Bundy. I don't know. That doesn't get me overly excited. I think they could maybe fix him because Bundy was such a very valued prospect. And he had some days more, keep in mind. He wasn't terrible. But I mean, after that, like, you're just going around the list. And to be perfectly honest, I think any addition in the rotation that's upwards of like near the same echelon as either replacing Robbie Ray or being in a similar line to Berríos or to be at the top end of the rotation will be via trade. And there are a lot of teams that are signaling that they are willing to move off of people. Oakland, Oakland might move to Las Vegas in a couple of years. It looks like they're going towards a tear down as well. I think it was Ken Rosenthal. But it looks like they're going to tear it all down, start over, as they always do, that normal Oakland Athletics cycle, when you maybe make the playoffs, flirt with it for two or three years, and then you got to do it all over again before players get paid. So that opens up Manaea, Chris Bassett, and others. But yeah, in the free agent market, John Gray is the one that people are drawn to, and for good reason. He does feel like he could be the next Robbie Ray, where you get him in here, high strikeout guy, as Ray was, some control issues that Robbie Ray had, and you get him in here, you fix him, and he's ready to go, hopefully. I don't think we're going to see anybody, maybe, but maybe not, replicate what Robbie Ray just did. But Gray, there's no reason why he couldn't be a nice middle-of-the-rotation arm with upside to be a top-end guy. And at the end of the day, the interesting thing that we're going to have to navigate, guys, whenever we think of free agents, is the new policy that's going to go into effect for vaccinations. Athletes need to be vaccinated to come into Canada as of January 15th. There's no more rules. There's no more exceptions. And apparently, somebody dug this up when I put it on Twitter earlier. John Gray is vaccinated. So that is good news.
That's one checkbox already right in the
right
spot.
Exactly.
Jason, out of those guys I rambled off there, is there anybody that intrigues you outside of there or anybody you want to hammer home on that list? Trades are one thing. We'll talk trades because I obviously love the idea of getting Chris Bassett. He saved my fantasy team this year. But, yeah, who do you think is there anybody out of that? Obviously, you're hoping for getting the best out of somebody like Zach Greinke at the age of 38. McHugh's 34. Carlos Rodon's 28 out of that group, and he's the only lone guy in that age group at that point.
Rodon is interesting. He honestly probably has the most upside. Maybe you could argue. I think I wouldn't disagree that Jai maybe could reach him in terms of upside, but we've seen it, like, obviously with his no-hitter this year. Huge strikeout guy. I think there were concerns that his velocity did throughout the year. And then I feel like there could be makeup concerns as well in terms of, you know, how he is in the clubhouse. But there's no question that he's definitely a guy maybe on a short-term deal where he's continuing to rebuild value. That could be interesting. I think a guy that you didn't mention that I would really, it's not a sexy name, but I think could be super valuable is Alex Cobb. If you look at his numbers last year, it's pretty impressive. You know, his strikeouts per nine spiked. It was like almost, it's above nine and it's almost 10. And then his FIP is under three, and his ex-FIP is around the low threes as well. And, you know, he's 34. He pitched in less than 20 games last year. So he'll probably come at a discount as well. So if you get him on a 2 or 3 year deal, or maybe even a 1 or 2 year deal at Steven Matz value, I think he could easily be a back end starter and even has potential to be even more than that, because he's shown it with the Rays. He showed it last year with the Angels, and he's kind of like a low under the radar name that I would honestly love to have in the rotation.
He's been a guy that we've talked about on the show a lot. And even when we were all three of us together writing at Jay's Journal, it seemed like he was always floating around free agent wire. You just want to make sure you're bringing that one back for the hell of it. Jason. I get it. But no, he does spell this team as a great, like you said, back end guy, safety net, worst case scenario. And if he was the last guy standing at the end of this whole thing, I'd be completely happy with him, because the other guy that I was looking at possibly, you know, sweep off the wire here was Alex Wood. But apparently the rumor has it is he's going to re-sign with the Giants, and there's not going to be a lot of talking in that whole situation. But I'm in the ball that I would like to see something tried with Rodon. And I agree with you that there's enough things there to be intrigued about. There's a couple things that are dings in that whole argument as well. But if I could get him somewhere in the prove it or, you know, kind of ballpark, that's that next step up from what we gave maybe Steven Matz on the prove, you know, then maybe we're in that ballpark and we're doing business together, because then he doesn't have to be the guy like he has been supposedly being with the Chicago White Sox the last, God, see, it feels like forever. But other than that, the free agent market outside of now going back to Robbie Ray or going completely all in on Max Scherzer guys, all those guys kind of tend to be interchangeable to me, and it's going to look very eerily similar to that Steven Matz contract and money. I just don't think it's firm. So are you all in and getting back Robbie Ray at this point now, if you've lost your quote-unquote safety school, basically, right?
I said it last week, Kevin Gausman's still my number one. Like, if it's not Robbie Ray coming back, Gausman, people don't realize this. Gausman has had, he's figured his shit out, like, since he's left Baltimore. He has had a couple mechanical adjustments. He's had two of his best career seasons with the Giants the last couple of years. And the Blue Jays were in on him at the end of 2019, last year, this year. They're one of the teams rumored to be very interested in Gausman. They had for Gausman a three-year deal last year, and I believe it was upwards of $40 million total. That would have been a steal if they got Kevin Gausman for that term and that money. Just a note to Blue Jays fans that might be thinking Kevin Gausman and thinking of the guy who had a mid-5 ERA in one of his last years with Baltimore. No, he's a top end of the rotation arm, really good, and he's finally reached that potential that the Orioles were hoping when he came up. So he is top. It's just a matter if they're going to be able to get him. And he is vaccinated, too. That's another thing I looked up. He is vaccinated.
You're going to make sure that checkbox is filled and every person we talk
about.
Have
to, or they're not going to be able to sign them. They're not going to be able to sign them if they're not vaccinated.
They're also not going to be able to get paid if they don't hurry up and figure that one out. So just putting that out there as well. So to that other point you had mentioned, though, his regular season last year, he got 192 innings and 14-6 record with the Giants, who were ungodly, very similar in makeup and team, just not, obviously more rookie versus where the 2.81 ERA. And this is the thing that I knew he was missing a lot of bats, Brendan, but this, I'm looking at this and seeing 227 strikeouts.
I had no idea
that he was missing that many bats. For bullpen relief near his end of the tenure with the Orioles was enough to figure out how to take that to the next level. And obviously, like you said, he's figured out a few other things.
He's good.
Jason, is that a name that's screaming intrigue to you, or you unfortunately in my camp that you're wondering which Gausman you get?
He's definitely a name that I like. It all comes down to the opportunity cost, right? Like how many years and what term it's going to take to sign him. I think there's a reason why we're seeing the Blue Jays go after, you know, like at the start of the season, they were heavily in on Luis Castillo. They were heavily in on the Miami starters. They were in on Justin Verlander, who is Noah Syndergaard as well. So maybe this front office right now doesn't really want to commit years and big money to a guy like Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman. And that's why they wanted those guys on 2 or 3 year deals, whether it was on a trade or whether it was, you know, a guy trying to bounce back in free agency. So I think, honestly, I think right now the probability of signing a Ray or a Gausman is more than we think. I think we're getting excited, obviously, because, you know, they're big names and we have money to spend. But I think right now the focus may be on shorter term guys, whether it's through trade or free agency. And that might be just because that fits in more in line with our window. And we also have to remember that we're going to have to, at some point, make an effort to re-sign Vladdy and Bo and all those guys, right? And they're going to be demanding contracts. And if we have Ray or Gausman at 25 to 30 in 4 or 5 years, that's going to be that much harder. So I think that's why, at least that's one reason why we might be avoiding the big money contracts for now. But if the price drops and if it's at a level, you know, where we can handle it, then 100% I would be in for those guys.
Yeah, and obviously you weren't on the show last week, but we spent a good chunk of time talking about the Berríos deal and what that really is meaning for the prospective franchise. And we all kind of came to the same conclusion that it's them hedging their bet to make sure that they keep the right people that are younger involved in on this whole thing and lining up more with the eventual, I would say, ends of Bo and Vlad and company. And obviously we already have Springer's contract on play. Ryu's doing what Ryu does, but we really only have 2 more years on his money, things like that. So everything that I've been seeing this offseason points to that they are going to get arms in a trade. Who that is, I'll give you a complete goddamn wild card on right now because there's so many random names about. And to the fact if the A's do a full tear down in the fire sale, see on the show last week, is that where you're thinking that things are leaning right now, or at least kind of looking?
With Oakland?
I mean, just in general from the Blue Jays trying to ensure that they're staying younger and signing these deals up to the right to line up with that core.
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing in office is obviously they want to build a championship caliber team, but they focused from day one on building a sustainable winner. I think that's the biggest difference between the previous regime with Alex Anthopoulos and then the current one by Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins. And that's not a ding on Alex Anthopoulos. I think he's a phenomenal general manager as well. And what he did with Atlanta this past year was great. But often with him, you know, sometimes you're left in a position where you have to start from ground zero. And, you know, that's obviously sometimes not ideal for fans. Whereas with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, they really want to stress the importance of, you know, I think being like a team like St. Louis, I think, related team that's seemingly competing for the playoffs every year. They're in it every year, but hopefully better than St. Louis, where we're competing for championships everywhere, every year. But at the very least, you know, making the playoffs, being in the playoff race every year, and giving fans an opportunity to cheer for their team without spending consistently. And I think staying young and looking for those opportunities to find value is a big part of that.
They've done a great job of doing exactly what you just said, building it up from nothing, because this is a team that had to trade the 2016 team to get to where we are right now. We're finally seeing the fruits of that labor over the last 2 seasons, and the Blue Jays are that much better for it because they basically have one of the best offenses cemented in baseball for the next, at least 5 years, right? So if you can get some of this pitching stuff figured out around that young core, this thing is going to be pretty damn lights out for a while. And I think you're going to be hard-pressed telling any other Blue Jay fan anything different than that. So why don't we talk about the other thing that we've been dancing around a little bit here, which is actually how do you continue to keep that? So segue points to you, Jason. Our competitors, the Tampa Bay Rays, turned around and signed what was the number one prospect in all of base heading into this past season, and that is Wander Franco, who is going to be their everyday shortstop for the better part of, a decade and a little extra, 12 years possibly. There is a buyout in this contract in the midst of he can opt out at one point, but 12 years, $23 million, so $223 million in this extension for Wander Franco. And the way this is sliced out, this actually ends up looking pretty damn team friendly and an amazing move for the Tampa Bay Rays. This honestly screams a lot of what, to me, they did back in the day with Evan Longoria and David Price. They still can trade him. There's no trade clause in this, according to Jeff Passan. And it gets them through everything they need to. And he gets the right incentives to his team as long as he wants, basically, at this point. I am not seeing which year he is able to opt out in, though. I forget when that was. But to that point, this is in his rookie season, guys. A 288 hitter and with 7 home runs and 30 guys. And at the time that he got injured, I think he had played – it was so many games with a hit or something like that, that it was a rookie record or damn near close to it. So this could be the template going forward for a future Toronto Blue Jays prospect being secured. We have plenty of them in now. Bobichet, Vlad, who both of those guys should be in the Silver Slugger race, not just one of them. And then we're going to have guys like Alec Manoah and whatnot that are also going to be pushing into that station, I would think, as soon as after next year with Manoah. But this screams the template going forward, and I would make the argument that Vlad, if you're going to sign him to this 3-year, 12-year deal, it's going to look even more ridiculous because he's already proven the fact that he's basically be this past season. Brendan, I'm going to let you run with this one first. Where do you think this profiles as far as baseball pushing extensions for players?
I love seeing kids get paid what they deserve based on what they are doing. And probably by the end of the contract, it's going to look like a steal for the Rays just based on how hyped up Wander Franco is. I mean, it figures that the Blue Jays have this young stud in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who's a top prospect. But then what do you know, a year later, the Rays have one too. And now we're going to have to put up with him for the next 12, unless he gets traded before then. But yeah, it's definitely a blueprint moving forward. I think the thing that stood out to me earlier this week was Peter Gammons. I haven't seen this anywhere else. It's only been from Peter Gammons so far. But Gammons was reporting that Bichette had a contract extension put in front of him, but the union was advising him to not take it because of the upcoming CBA and the deal expiring. Jason, I'm not sure if you saw that either, but there was somebody who retweeted. It's like, well, Gammons, you're kind of burying the lead here. The Blue Jays offered Bo Bichette a contract extension. And that just makes me question, for how long, for how much? What does that money look like? And why is the union advising him not to take it? If Bo wants to get paid and lock himself into this team for the next 10 years, sign it right now, please, and get it done. But yeah, definitely Franco's contract will be a template that I'm sure Vlad is going to strive for, something very similar, if not a little bit better. And Bo could come in right around the same. And that's gets back to Jason's point earlier. Maybe the Blue Jays don't go after these big names like Ray and Gausman to keep that financial flexibility open for these extensions, because there's other guys who will need to get paid eventually too. I don't know what Kevin Biggio ends up becoming over the course of the next few years. Luckily, it seems like he won't be nearly as expensive as those guys. Somehow figures it out. But then you got to think of Lourdes Gurriel, who has 1 year less on his deal than was originally thought, and Teoscar. And then eventually others too. Franco's definitely going to be a template, and I would not be surprised if both Vlad and Bo get very similar deals to Franco.
God, Jason, I know you want to talk.
It's interesting. It's at the same time comparable, but also incomparable situation in that the obvious thing is that Franco's played 70 games in the major leagues to date. And if you remember what Vladdy and Bo looked like after 70 games, and if I'm sure after it, like if you told fans that we offered them a 12-year contract after their 70 game performance, they would not be having any of it.
Yeah,
and right. I've seen a lot of uptakes on Twitter now, you know, kind of bashing the Blue Jays for not doing that, but it's
different culture too.
Yeah, they're evaluating the value of the player based on what they've done after 2 to 3 seasons, not after 70 games.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with the Rays, you know, they're kind of in a position where they have to offer these big contracts based on minimal sample size. And I think that's one reason why, you know, we can't go to Bo or Vladdy today with a 12-year contract with that same. I think if you're with Vladdy at least 30 to 35 a year, and then Bo is definitely around that as well. And it's not going to be anywhere near the 18 average or something that Franco got.
Just did the math. It's about 18.6.
Yeah.
Per year.
And the second thing is, it's maybe less apparent, but the different familial situations. I have no idea what Franco's situation is like financially, but with Bo and Vladdy, you know, we know that their fathers were really successful baseball players as well. So they financially regardless. So they might actually want to test free agency. And players actually like free agency. Like Berríos said, you know, that was something he was looking forward to. And the Blue Jays convinced him to forego that. But players like the teams reaching out to them and appealing to them. And that's exactly maybe what Bo and Vladdy might be looking forward to. And since they are secure financially, you know, they might be less willing to sign that extension unless the Blue Jays pay up big. And, you know, at that point, is it really worth it to pay big early, you know, or do you just wait till free agency? So it's a dilemma for the Blue Jays. And the Wander Franco is, like I said, it's comparable, but at the same time, we can also take it for a grain of salt because there's a lot of fit there that make the two situations very different as well.
Yeah, I agree with you on the fact that this is a Rays move all day, every day. The Blue Jays move on this similar thing, I think, is closer to 10 years and more money if you and at the moment we're talking about here with the Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. Now, you've seen a full season because of the 2020 thing, and they were the studs on this team. There's no way in saying it other than that. And they're young. They're only going to get better at this point, especially with all the, you know, talk we hear from how good they, you know, what they learned from Marcus Semien, for example, and all that stuff. Jesse Barfield, if you want to get in that ballpark, whoever. but to that point, just me being the math nerd and the engineer here in the group here, I just goofed around and I typed in what it would take over 10 years, kind of like ballpark in here with those numbers you were talking around. If you're paying them, let's say 32 a year, either of them, you're talking $320 million in a 10-year deal. That's right up there with like the Mike Trout contract, anything that we've been talking about on this show, period. So that is literally the franchise for your next 10 years if you're doing that. And to that point, if they can continue to turn around minor league guys and do that and bring in guys, that is completely sustainable. But that is a giant chunk of your bank on two players going forward that I agree are the cornerstones of your franchise and you should just hurry up and do it. What do you guys say if it did take something like that to be able to do it tomorrow? Let's say that was the deal that Bo Bichette was given, that you said, hey, pump the brakes. You happy with that?
I think
it's closer to 30 with him, but as far as average.
The 30 for me would be Vladdy over Bo. As much as I love Bo, I think with Bo there's also a lot of limitations, if that's the right word, in terms of, you know, he's not the best defensive shortstop.
Mm-hmm. But
and you know, it's difficult to see because he is a little bit more of a smaller guy as well, so it's hard to see how that translates with age. And then with I think Vladdy can, you know, has hopefully a bit more long game. But both, you know, I think, but at time if saying no, I think, you know, it's also fine to wait until free agency and see if you can have a run at it that when they reach free agency as well, because you know you're still, they reach free agency, so obviously it's something that the Blue Jays want to do, but if they can't do it, you know, it's like they can't do it. So
yeah, so to that point though, you know, this could just be what it looks like once they finally hit free agency. So we could be paying that out of pocket now or paying later. So, but I do think there is something to say, Brendan, for them giving these contracts to these guys as far as pushing the competitive window. You're giving them the money they should be getting at, you know, right now, as far as what they would be making in their free agent years and stuff. That is going to lay a fire under their ass, I think, to do the right things. And the guys that I think have that character in it, oh, well, they're paying me this, I better hurry up and get my game going. And we already saw what they're making right now and what they did this year. So
yeah,
maybe this is one of those things that this is a rewarding them from their hard work ethic. Maybe it's not the tune of that crazy deal like that. They got the arbitration years with a proper dollar amount and ensuring that. But at least at that point for the Blue Jays, it's known money.
Well, and basically everything you described there, Craig, is why the CBA is going to be so difficult, because that's pretty much the exact issue. You summed it up right there, is players do want to get paid what they're worth, but there is nothing, there's no obligation for the Blue Jays to extend a contract to Bo or Vlad right now. People need to understand that. They can keep them around for very cheap. They would probably do very well in arbitration if a little bit longer, like getting closer to 20, 25 million per season in the next couple of years over ARB, depending on what they both file at. But that's, in a nutshell, what's going to make it so interesting on December 1st, which it's probably going to expire, and we're going to head towards some very rough niggins, is there's nothing, like, why would the owners want to give that up, where you don't have to pay guys like Bo and Vlad and Wander Franco and Juan Soto big money until they are obligated to, if they want to keep them around. There are some teams that have started to realize, hey, we want to reward our players for doing well, and we want to establish a good relationship, so let's pay them now, buy out their ARB years, and keep them around a couple extra years before they hit free agency. But again, there's nothing that the Blue Jays do not have to do this if they don't want to. Now, they'd be silly to probably not do that for a couple of them, especially Vlad. But the owners, at the end of the day, want this current CBA in place because it favors them much heavier than it does the players at the end of the day. And it's going to be so fascinating about the next little while, because we saw what happened in 2020 when Rob Manfred needed to lead negotiations with the players union and the owners over the COVID shortened season and how much players would be paid then. And this is a much bigger issue that's going to go through. So, but to answer your question, at the end of the day, Vlad is the, I'm with Jason. Vlad's the one that I would have no problem if right now it said, okay, you got to pay Vlad 10 years. Well, it's tough. I would be very comfortable with it, I think, and wouldn't bat an eye at 10 years, definitely 25 million per, if that's what it took. I think you'd do that in a heartbeat. Even if it got up to 30, I think most people would be fine with that, because you know you have him for a while, and he probably lives up to that, to be honest with you.
He'd probably be backloaded a little bit more anyway. So yeah. To the Wander Franco deal, that was 25 million, I think, if he stayed in that 12th season.
Yeah,
was exactly how it was weighted.
Exactly. And it's Bo that'll be interesting, because as Jason said, defense is still a little bit of a struggle. And he's been known for a guy who has a very, very awkward swing. Like, I know Josh Donaldson, Bautista had some awkward mechanics too, which they figured out and it worked for them. But you never know. Like, sometimes this stuff stops working. And there are a couple holes in Bo's offensive game too. It was a fantastic season, and I have no doubt that he could probably replicate that a couple more times throughout his career, probably more often than not. But there is still some cause for concern to Bo Bichette, where I would not pay him $35 million per year, $30 million per year at this point. Say 10 years, I don't know, 200, or 10 years, 180, or something along those lines. Yeah, sign me up. I think that's fine. Yeah. I think that turns out to be a steal. But anything more at this point, I think they can hold out maybe one more year on Bichette and lock up Vlad right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Something that just screams from this in Major League Baseball in general, right? Who's the guy that usually gets paid the most on the lineup? The first baseman that just thumps at the plate, right? We can even name a few guys in this freaking franchise, Carlos Delgado being the one that, in my mind, that's what the Blue Jays did. Locked him up for a good amount of time, and he just was out there every day at first base. And that's just how it was. Vlad screams that prototype player to me. And to that point, I have no problem doing that, giving him the money he needs to get right now and keep going on it. I think that rewards him for the amount of work that he put in this past offseason, that shows him, hey, you might want to keep doing this and ensuring the fact that you're hitting the weight room and doing everything he did to ensure the fact that he's going to continue to have this kind of tenure in the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think that's the right way to do it. But I agree with you that maybe this thing for the Bo Bichette part looks like more buying out maybe the first couple of years of his free agency, because there is also a big age difference between the two of them too that most people don't realize as they date season. You know, Vlad is what, barely 22, and I think Bo's 3 years older than him, if I recall off the top of my head. I can't remember, but there is a little, just enough of a difference there in age too that would also change some of the contract in my head. But what do I know? I just sit behind this microphone and talk every other couple of weeks.
Well, was 23 and Vlad is 22.
Okay, that's what it was. I didn't realize it was that close. I thought it was further.
Bo is 98, Vlad is 99.
Gotcha. So, all right. But anyway, outside of that, I think Vlad's where you just dump a pile of money in it, because right now, I think there's no reason he's not going to replicate exactly what he did and maybe soon if he doesn't have that lull he had for the month of August. There could be a difference between an MVP there or not. Just saying. but anyway, fellas, moving along. The 40-minute mark. I wanted to talk a little, unless you guys want anything on either of those 2 points there with the contract extensions to chit-chat about and whatnot, before I dive into a quick review, because we haven't done this yet, our 2021 season in review stuff here. We're going to start off with the Toronto Blue Jays.
That'll be fun.
It's the only one I think we can get done in 15, 20 minutes. That's why.
Yeah.
So to that point, the Toronto Blue Jays had a very, very polarizing in the bullpen, and it literally is the tale of two seasons on paper. This team started off the season with a bullpen that was one of the best in baseball. Literally was lights out, locked it down every damn night, and then all of a sudden it was like the worst in baseball. It literally almost seemed like an overnight once we lost a few cute guys that I know you guys are very fond of. One of those guys I think is still technically with the team, but I don't know. So I can't remember, but anyway, we'll go into that in a minute. But I have a few key emergences with, you know, Jordan Romano stepping up into a closer's role. This is a team that originally had Kirby Yates as our closer for the season, and he didn't even get a chance to play. He barely even got a freaking phone call in at the spring training camp at that lovely new facility, you know. So, since looking at the year as a whole, I know there's some different things going on. This team ends up being one game short of getting into the playoffs. How critical was the fact that that bullpen fell apart for the course of about a month and a half?
Very critical, you know, because it's this one game, right? So, and a lot of the games were lost by the bullpen. But, you know, there's also questions as to, you know, if Charlie could have managed a couple games better, you know. But I think the front office did a good job managing the storm, and that they brought in Adam Simber and Trevor Richards very, very early. I think it was like 1 or 2 months before the trade deadline. So they clearly identified that there was a hole in the roster. And, you know, especially with Adam Simber, that we ended up trading Joe Pickett, a very, very low-level lottery ticket, I think. So, you know, that was incredible. And we have Simber for a while now, I think. So as a whole, started off, you know, didn't look so good with a couple struggling months, but we did a good job filling the holes. And then I think we did a good job also managing the injuries that popped up throughout the year. Like, I think a full season of Ryan Barucki might be huge. At one point, he looked like Andrew Miller sometimes.
Yeah.
And he has some good potential. Romano, we've established as our closer. And, you know, from what I've seen, you know, we're also interested in some of the premier relievers in the free agency, though I don't think that's the way we want to go. I'm never a big fan of handing out big contracts to relievers, no matter how good they are. But, you know, even if we get a couple of relievers in free agency that maybe aren't the top dogs, but are very solid and have good bounce back potential, and I think the bullpen could be another strength for us next year. If, you know, we see those the guys that emerge could emerge, and then the guys who are injured bounce back and hopefully have a good year. But with the bullpen, it's so hard to predict. It's probably the area of the roster that has the most volatility year to year. So I think it's good to have a lot of options in the bullpen. But last year, it was good. It was good.
Yeah. So the Blue Jays ended up having 33 different arms come out of the bullpen this past season. That's so I don't know how that compares into seasons at all, Brendan, but that seems like a lot of guys.
Yeah, like I'm just looking at some of the names here, and I can picture exactly when these guys were coming out of the bullpen. Like I'm looking at Joel Piamps, who's actually okay. Yeah, Piamps was all right for a little while. Who else is on this list? Going through Jeremy Beasley, Carl Edwards Jr., Tommy Malone, Connor Overton, and I just have late May, early June in my head, especially that four-game Rays series over the course of May long weekend, and the one before Victoria Day weekend and the one before Memorial Day in the United States when the Blue Jays got swept in four games by the Rays in that series. But look, the Blue Jays bullpen, when you go through and look who's going to be around at this point, is actually off to a really good start, to be perfectly honest. Like, you're going to have Jordan Romano, you have Adam Simber, you have Tim Mayza, all three who are close to one F4 out of the bullpen on Fangraphs. Then you still got Trevor Richards, and you have Ryan Barucki coming back, as Jason mentioned, a guy who could be key for this team. Guys, I think at this point, you can count on giving you some very good innings out of the bullpen next year. whatever happens with the rotation, we'll see what happens. Ross Stripling could be a six man in that bullpen right now as a long guy or a swing man out of the bullpen that makes a couple starts, but come relief. And if you want to pencil him in there, then you have a very good six so far. And then that's where a couple free agent signings come into play. You sign maybe a decent contract for one of the guys, not a long-term one. I'm with you, Jason. I'm not a fan of paying big money to relievers, but there might be a bar out there for a guy who's had a lot of success. I can't remember. I think is David Phelps, Phelps signed a 1-year deal when he came back, or was it a 2-year? Because I was just
looking. He was the guy I was talking about. That's the reason I feel like he's legit actually on the roster for next year, but I
don't remember. I can't find him on FanGraphs. If he's still under contract. But what I'm getting to with Phelps is that bullpen in my mind, and I said this quite a few times throughout the year as the season went along, but also at the time, Merriweather getting something I think we could all see come after that Yankees series where he just blew the lights off the door and was incredible. But when David Phelps went down for the year, that's where the balloon popped for me. And that's why I'm kind of curious about, because he was damn good. Like, you could rely on David Phelps in any situation. You could have him be an opener. He'll get you quality outs. You can have him be a setup guy. He could close games. David Phelps is actually a very good bullpen arm. That's why I want to know if he's back, because if he is, then there you go. There are seven guys right there that you can start. Even if he's not, I'd bring him his surgeries like and his rehab looks like. I'd sign him back right now.
To that point, he's a free agent. I believe you.
Free agent?
Well, to that point, yeah. Sign him. Give him the money. Give him here. I'd be happy to bring him back knowing what he did to trying to take another risk on what Kirby Yates's rehab looks like.
It's crazy.
You know, things like that.
I was seeing yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that there's actually quite a few teams that are in on Kirby Yates right now, and they're willing to pay him 2 years because that's what he's looking for, to continue his rehab, but also build back up, kind of like the Kel that he just got with Seattle. Ken Giles is going to be back this year for the Mariners, and that'll be a nice piece for their bullpen. I'm all for bringing back David Phelps if they can, and clearly they like him, and he seemed to enjoy his time here because that was his second stint with the team.
To that point, Brendan, I think you actually legit said that when the team started going down, that we might be able to look back on if we didn't have the resurgence in that part in August and do what we did at the end of the season. You were basically saying the day that David Phelps got hurt was the day that the Blue Jays fell apart.
Yeah,
and that was your pinpoint window of where things went wrong.
Yep.
And I tend to agree with you because the guy was freaking lights out for those 10 innings that he pitched. And that was where we still didn't really have the closer role figured out with Romano turning around and doing what he did. But I want some of those things that Jason was saying. Yes, they made a bunch of great moves too, but the fact that they knew in the management level of the Toronto Blue Jays that this bullpen was the problem, period. They knew they could score runs. They knew they had enough starting pitching, but they weren't getting deep enough in the game. The David Phelps thing happened. The Tyler Chatwood thing happens where he falls off the freaking wheel. And honestly, that was right after that David Phelps thing where I think that was the just enough a mess to his psyche that maybe he lost his partner in crime. That messed it up. But the fact that they turned around and just tried to throw waiver picks any way that they could get in. There's some pretty good guys they tried into this whole thing, and then some great internal options that haven't quite fully formed into place yet in the Patrick Murphys, the Ty Tices of the world. But having guys, they tried to bring in Carl Edwards Jr., who a couple of years ago was a very salvageable Cubs reliever. They bring in, you know, everybody that you had mentioned, Jason, Joaquin Soria, Brad Hand. We didn't get the best out of Soria, unfortunately. He was really legit healthy any of the time he was with the Toronto Blue Jays. And then, obviously, there's something wrong with Brad Hand's head that he just couldn't throw the ball over the plate anymore. He did the same thing when he got to the Mets. So, I don't know. I really think that they tried anything they humanly possibly can to make this a playoff team with what they had. But, unfortunately, they just couldn't get the best out of these guys that they were hoping to bring up. And the fact that even those last few weeks of the season we were relying on Nate Pearson as much in the bullpen still spelling a little bit of disaster, right? So does anybody want to add anything to that whole idea, other than the fact that Brendan, I think you hit the nail on the head that this on paper looks very serious. You're talking to the low end guys or the Taylor Saucedos of the world that actually had a pretty good rookie season with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, Saucedo was all right. I didn't like some of the situations he was used by Charlie, but we'll save that for another time. But yeah, I mean, even if you want to dive a little bit further and look at it, who knows what's happening with Anthony Kay. If he has maybe a more defined role, good lefty out of the pen who can get up to 97, 98. Julian Merriweather, again, I'm sure if he's healthy, he will probably crack the bullpen. and they'll ride him as long as possible. And then the question is going to be, depending on what they do with the rotation, what do they do with Nate Pearson? And I keep on remembering Ross Atkins. It was either Atkins or Shapiro. I'm pretty sure it was Atkins. At the end of the season, when he was asked about Nate Pearson, they seemed very open to him being a bullpen arm at the end of the year, because they know if it's not going to work out in the rotation, he could be a very dominant two, maybe even three inning reliever, kind of like Colin McHugh, a guy that a lot of people would love to see in the Blue Jays bullpen, a guy who the Blue Jays can seemingly not hit this season when the Rays brought him in out of the bullpen. So, yeah, if you add all that up, the bullpen is in very good shape. I would expect that to maybe be addressed a little bit later in the offseason, like they did in 2017, 2018, 2019, with guys who are lingering, get them on a one-year deal, add that depth, and then you don't, and then you're not cautions where you have to run out Piamps or Connor Overton or other guys like that when injuries inevitably do happen. But the bullpen will be a good, I think, will be a strength. It is volatile, so maybe we won't get as dominant Adam Simber. You never know. There might be some regression, say words, but they're off to a good start. It's a very good bullpen. I still don't know how they fleeced Miami for Adam Simber. I know Miami isn't a team that's going to contend this year, but still, like, that was a fleece considering they still have Simber for at least, I think, 2 more years on his deal.
I'll throw that idea that the GM there must have some wonderful intel on that wild card that they got with Joe Panik. Is the only thing that makes sense to me, but she's brilliant. She seems like she's getting that team moving action. So to that point, I really am wondering what the hell that she saw, and I forget the even name. That's how low they were on the radar for me on that, and I'm the minor league guy. I'm missing out apparently. So, but Jason, is there anybody screaming to you that is the add-on for this Toronto Blue Jays bullpen that would be kind of like the icing on the cake on these guys that we know we're getting back in the Bruckies, Romanos, and everybody?
In terms of free agency, or
you can give me whatever you want, man. I left it open. Reason.
Sorry, I missed that. I think you cut out there.
Oh, sorry. I was saying I left it open ended for a reason. If you got a trade, guy, I see.
I think what was floated out there that I really like was Michael Lorenzen. But I think the problem with him is he's dominant. But I think he might want to go back into starting as well. And if, like, a rebuilding club offers him a one-year deal where he's a starter, then that's a bit more unfortunate. But then there's also a team that I forget it off the top of my head, but he was a top closer in Japan last year. And I know Rafael Dolis kind of shies us away from the top the closers in the MPB, but you know, there's interesting opportunities out there for sure. And, you know, I think we need definitely at least two or three more guys for me to feel confident in the bullpen. Because, like I said, you want as many that you can trust. Because, you know, you never know what the season is going to look like, even for, like, you.
Oh, we proved you need 33.
Ray Mano's going to struggle last season. Next year's.
So, one name that stuck out to me as a random flyer, and it's maybe because I'm secretly a Brewers fan on the side. Corey Knebel is a free agent. He's floating around the bottom part of that top free agents list. And he screams bounce because he's always got the stuff. If he can figure out that next piece where he's getting a little bit older and just know how to outsmart some hitters, which I think he might be able to learn from the whole Pete Walker connection, you know. It just seems like that's something right there that would be he didn't have it quite with this past series, and he looked good with the Diamondbacks, but he wasn't the guy he was with the Milwaukee Brewers a few years ago.
There's actually a lot of names just looking at the right-handed ones right now scrolling through here that will probably linger, and you might be able to get them on maybe even minor league deals, maybe some of the older guys. But even just looking at some of the names, like some of the ones that I'd be fine bringing in, like you go through alphabetical order, Brad Boxberger, Brad Brock, Steve Cishek, Alex Colome, who had some really good years with the Rays, Chris Davinsky, a huge strikeout guy with the Astros last couple of years. Then you keep on going down the list, Michael Givens.
You talk about different looks. Cishek is literally the best different look.
Absolutely. Neville, as you said, Craig. But there's tons, like, and really high velocity guys out there on that market, too. So they don't have to break the bank for a Kenley Jansen or something like that. But if they do, that'd be fun. But all bullpen sign with risk, as Jason alluded to.
And Jensen's one of those guys that screams bullpen risk to me.
I can, yeah, it'd be an exciting name for sure based on how dominant he's been in the past, but it does scream.
PJ Ryan. All right, did I say that out loud? So I love him, don't get me wrong, but I liked PJ Ryan back when too, and that was before he was a Blue Jay. So anything you guys want to add to that conversation there before I have a fun little continuation of a game that we had a couple weeks ago? We have another Jays Journal guy on the show. I got to put him on the spot.
I don't think so. I can't, like, I mean, the bullpen, I think we nailed it. They were very down in mid-May and early June. The trade of Simber and Richards really righted the ship, and they finished strong.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head, though. They're going to be looking for a righty reliever because they got enough young lefties, I think. And we already talked out one here. Jason's very high on Ryan Borucki. They have Sato. They also have Anthony Kay, Mesa. There's four guys right there. That's already enough lefties to be running through a whole season without your bullpen, I think. Especially with the whole, we don't have the specialized lefty things anymore or what. So I think that's enough to run with. Especially those four guys, I think, have the right stuff to get righty hitters out too. Although somehow Aaron Loops figured that out and he's got a contract already too. But besides
the point, man.
I just remember it had to have been 4-5 years ago. Aaron was Hill here in Rochester, New York, pitching in AAA, and I'm like, his career is over with. It looked that bad.
It was that close. It was very, very close.
Yeah. So, anyway, the game that we played, we've been trying to figure a fun way to end the show every week, and we found some fun ones. A couple weeks ago, Chris Henderson was on the show, and I'm like, you know what? I got to do something Jay's Journal related because we all used to write together and we have fun. And funny enough, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you're now on the official podcast.com now because we've taken
I did that. See that. I love that.
So I thought that was kind of fun that we all got to play full circle here and we get to keep our same friends involved. But so what we did was I pulled up everybody's Blue Jays page and I put Chris on the spot to see if he could guess what his most popular articles were according to the aggregator. And mine was top prospect Sean Reed Foley, get ready. Brendan, yours was quick hits on their latest acquisition in Trent Thornton.
I don't know why that one did so well. I don't get it.
It's how the fun is with this whole thing. And this is why this is so stupid and fun to be able to goof around with here. I liked your second, taking a deeper look into the good signing of Jaime Garcia was your other one. I still can't believe that got reads at all. It's Jaime Garcia. So, Jason, do you have any idea what maybe your top two articles would be? I can give you one if that helps.
One of them must be the Ryu one.
It's up there, but it's not the best one.
Is it not? Is it?
That's your third, according to the aggregator, anyway.
Is Yosemite the Yosemite Zulueta one?
That is your number one.
Which
that
one?
So that was Zulueta.
Zulueta.
The Blue Jays pitching. The Blue Jays pitcher. Everybody's suddenly talking about. That was a good read.
He's an intro. I talked with. Because I was fortunate enough to have a quick Zoom meeting with Andrew Tinnish, and he was so high on him before we got the Tommy John. But I think he's after, because Tommy John recently, you know, pitchers come back stronger. So definitely a name to watch out for as they come back.
Yeah, and he's on the young, I think he's like 24 or something like that too. So he's on the younger side. So he could be somebody that's going to be here in the Blue Jays bullpen possibilities.
He could be fast-tracked for sure, I think.
So now that I clicked the wrong damn button. So what do you think your second one was?
I need a hint for that one.
Okay, so this was 4 years ago.
Four?
It was February 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this just shows how much fun Jason's been having for years with us goofing around at Jason.
Man, I don't know. I have no idea.
That's February 2017.
I know. I remember that one fondly. It's like,
all right,
it's
like fans.
Blue Jays' biggest business blunder or something like that.
That's exactly.
It was the, I was talking about a good design for super cheap, and I thought that that they weren't exploiting the KBO or even the Asian market enough. And there's a lot of cheap talent out there. So in the future, I hope they continue to. There's one where that is really, really, really exciting right now. So I hope they're keeping tabs on him. He's it's interesting because he's a big guy, and I think he's a first baseman. But he just won the KBO championship, and he's super young. And I know the level of play in Korea is like only double A level, but still he's raking double A pitching. So at young of an age, so it's exciting, and I hope to see him in the big league soon.
Get him in the system.
And to that point, with them having connection and everything going on, you would think that he would have a little bit of a tap on that to be like, going, hey, you know, you guys might want to pay attention over here.
I wish the Blue Jays would exploit that Ryu connection more, because right now, it's like, for me, I get to see how all the teams in football or soccer are exploiting the Korean players on their team. You know, for example, Son at Tottenham, or even Hwang at Wolverhampton. You know, they're pumping out Korean content for the Korean fans. So, like, they're trying to build their fan base in Korea. But right now, the Blue Jays are doing, like, nothing. So
it's almost one of those things. I never understood that one either, because even with the fact that you're in such a culturally diverse and rich city, it just seems weird to me to take advantage of every possible venue that they could. And I don't care where the talent comes from. Everybody, as long as they click with this team and everybody can do something on the field to help them win, that's the end game. It doesn't matter any of that other stuff. Where you came from, who you played for, great. What are you going to do today to help this team win the ball game? That's the end of the game, right?
There's a lot of business opportunity, too, in terms of, you know, if you can capture – a lot of the Korean fan base, you know, right?
Always.
It's frustrating for me to see. It's like, I wish I could, you know, you're missing out on a big opportunity.
Huge opportunity.
What can you do? So,
yeah, someday they'll get wise, because it took them a long time to figure out there's good players playing in the Latin America area there too for a while. Then all of a sudden we have Tony Fernandez, George Bell, everybody. And that's been their biggest camping area for looking for young talent. They're going to need to. Baseball is truly a world class operation at this point. They need to start looking around anywhere they humanly possibly can. And I think the KBO, like Eugene, is ripe for talent to bring to the, you know, the world scale, not just being in Korea. So, and to that point, I'm not going to lie, I do enjoy watching KBO baseball. It's just fun.
It was nice having it back at first during the pandemic last year, the height of it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. That was what I discovered it. But, oh, my God, I had a great time watching it. And I thought it was very interesting with the fact that they took certain things from the broadcasts from KBO when baseball did come back to the, you know, empty stadiums with the cutouts. And I think it was the Tampa Bay Rays that still did the stuffed animals and everything that, like, I was seeing in some of the KBO broadcasts as fans, too. But it was just exciting to have baseball back, and they were ahead of the curve on that whole thing, and it was very fun to watch. And honestly, I'm glad, regardless of all the stuff that happened, that I got woke that there is great Korean baseball to that point too. So, because usually you only hear about Japanese baseball, and that is not painting the right picture for baseball in general as a world sport, period. So I was very happy to hear that happen, or and get to see, witness myself at, like, what, 2 a.m. or whatever it was when I was watching. So, but Jason, I agree with you, and that is still, like I said, if somebody Googles Jason Lee and your author page comes up to the Blue Jays article, they're going to get to read about Blue Jays. Need to hurry up and capitalize on that.
It might be relevant to resurface, to be honest.
Just retweet that one out for the shit and giggle and see what the hell happens. Worst case scenario, it's going to be your most popular one, right? So, Jason, this is your moment to shine as we are getting ready to wrap up here and whatnot. Is there anything you would like to say to the Blue Jays Nation and all our friends at Jays Journal?
First off, I just really want to thank you for inviting me back. You know, it's really had a good time. Yeah, I've been super busy. For those of you who don't know, I'm currently in my fourth year at Western, and I fortunately, or perhaps foolishly, took on a thesis project this year. So been in the lab for a while. But every opportunity to talk about our Blue Jays, it's a real joy, and obviously with two of the finest gentlemen in the business, you know, it's even better.
It could be blush, man.
Yeah, there you go. We're just gonna have to make sure that now this post-pandemic thing is going on, that I can come up and actually have the ballpark and do what we did on the flight deck a few years ago. So
but yeah,
very fun stuff.
still with GA's Journal, not writing as often because, again, been so busy. But then I'm also been trying to help grow Korean football around the world as well, and covering the Korean soccer team as well. So it's been a fun blast. You know, I've been fortunate enough to interact with fans around the globe, especially, you know, there's this one player that you Fenerbahce, which is a Turkish team. So I've met a bunch of Turkish fans, and I think that's just the great power of sports, right? Like, it's worldwide. It can connect people of all ages, you know, sexes, genders, culture. So it's been a blast, and I look forward to connecting with a lot more baseball fans and a lot more soccer fans in the future. So if you ever want to have a good conversation, my DMs are always open on Twitter. And yeah, I'd love to have a nice conversation.
I learned all about Wang. Wolves signed him because of you, Jason, and he's turned out to be a very good loanee for Wolves.
Yeah.
He's really good.
There you go. And Jason, obviously, you're more than welcome here anytime you want to join us on our fun little barroom stash that we have going on here. So just make sure you let us know, and you're welcome anytime.
Sounds good.
So. To that point, Blue Jays fans, as we wrap up, as I had mentioned, we are the official podcast of jaysjournal.com on FanSided. Make sure you hit us up and talk to us there. Catching the wonderful scribblings on the website there. Also, make sure you click on wherever you can for us and get your podcasting pleasures. Also, live every Wednesday, basically, for the most part, 90% of the time, 7 o'clock Eastern time. If not, it will be the following Thursday, but that's American Thanksgiving this year for me, and I'm going to be fat tomorrow, just saying. Fat and full of beer. So to that, Blue Jays fans, I think we'll finish this off like we used to, claps and a Ric Flair.
Let's do it.
Woo!
Woo! Oh, let's go, Blue Jays.
We are the best.
And we're clear.